south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, still plugging away, trying out new mics, and getting a lot of feedback from people saying it's much better, but not like the first mic. Remember, for the last few months now, I've been doing shows remote. Hotels, beach resorts, Airbnbs, from the backseat of an Uber. Well, believe it or not, sometimes. Anyways, I fine-tune this mic thing. I do appreciate more feedback, so do shoot me a comment or two if you're so inclined. All right, let's start off today with a very interesting comment about that banking situation I was talking about maybe two shows ago now. If you remember, I read an email from Mr. B., you know, the expat who's expert in teaching English to Chinese kids online from anywhere in the world. By the way, he gives a little spiel about how to do that at every one of my seminars. Oh, and to digress a bit, I get emails from people saying, Johnny, I'd really like to give it a try. $20 plus an hour ain't necessarily driveway chicken feed, especially when you're down here in Latin America. Hell, $20 is more than the average Latin American makes in a day. So naturally, people are always saying, Johnny, I want in on that. Where do I sign? Then the next obvious question is always, what kind of certification and diplomas do I need? Do I need a college English degree? Just a college degree? Do I need a first world teaching certificate? Do I have to take some kind of international test to qualify to teach English online? Well, at the seminar, Mr. B explains all that and more. But to answer that particular certification question, just so emails don't keep rolling in about the same old thing, the fact is Mr. B only has a GED. No college diplomas, teaching certificates, or degrees. So that pretty much means anyone with a high school diploma can do it. Though I have to qualify something when I said that Mr. B only has a GED. He's a very bright guy, he really is, so you should never judge someone just because they have a GED, you know? Most millionaires, in fact billionaires of the world, never graduated college. In fact, I think some liberal arts colleges stunt your mental and intellectual growth rather than enhance it. You know what I'm talking about, censorship and safe spaces, please. But anyway, the topic we're concerned with now is how banks will screw you around, especially if you've got a U.S. bank and you're traveling around the world or living, working, playing, or doing business in Latin America. Now, just to refresh your memory, you might remember that Mr. B has a U.S. bank with an old U.S. phone number in their files, a number he hasn't had for a couple of years. And he found in order to get his card unblocked, for some reason they blocked it, he got in touch with them. They had to send him some kind of security code, which they would only send to his previously listed U.S. phone number, which did not exist anymore, so he was stuck in an endless loop, a real catch-22. So anyway, after hearing Mr. B's dilemma, I received a few emails from expats who've had the same thing happen to them. Case in point, this email from Jean-Luc. He says, Johnny, just a quick note regarding Mr. B and his U.S. bankster problem. I know plenty of expats myself in a similar situation. In fact, I was one of them. It's hard to get a fresh start and try to remain somewhat anonymous when you leave. No matter how long you're gone and how well you hide away, somebody, sometime, will hunt you down. Whether it's your bank, your kids, your wives, or the elementary school friend you borrowed and not returned a comic book from. Then he says, and yes, it seems your phone numbers from the past will haunt you forever too. Even decades after you've moved out of your parents' basement or left an apartment you skipped the rent on. But, Johnny, it doesn't mean you can't turn it into your advantage. The beauty of today is that you can really start a new identity when you leave your mother country and hold on to parts of the old one if you so desire. You can keep your childhood phone number and shed all the baggage. That's what I'm saying. Then he says, I'm not sure what kind of services they have in the U.S., perhaps one called Text Now, etc. But in Canada, you can use Fongo, F-O-N-G-O, to port your old landline or cell phone number to. It's an app. Or you can use Text Now, that's T-E-X-T-N-O-W. There are probably a lot of services like that. The thing is, Johnny, these apps work anywhere in the world. And when you answer or need to call somebody from way back when, you may as well be in Cleveland, as far as the banks or anyone else is concerned. Oh, and another thing, And do Root, that's R-O-O-T, your Android smartphone, to further anonymize your location. That is, to hide your existing SIM card NR, the IMEI-NR, or the new name you go by these days. So here's the steps to do it. You port your existing numbers or create new ones. And if you're mischievous and want to have a good laugh, clone the app as many times as you need and let all the numbers ring at the same time. I tell you, what can be more fun than sitting somewhere in the boonies of the Altiplano and getting a call for your father, who's been dead now 23 years? You know what they do. Some do-gooder group or organization picked your old man's phone number up from a list they bought because he fit their profile or demographic as a soft touch. But now it's you that answers his phone, to which you can honestly reply, "Sure, you can have the dough, as long as you've got a shovel and you can pry it from his cold, dead hands." Anyway, Johnny, as you know, there are hacks for everything. And thanks for your show. Continue to spread the message, Johnny. Signed, John Luke, a former Canadian in the Mexican Altiplano. All right, thanks for that, John Luke. Hey there to you, too. Now, here's something I think everyone ought to know, or at least should be aware of. We all love a beer once in a while, especially when we're sitting on the beach, nothing to do except hang out, curled up in a beach chair with a nice e-book. Yep, that's when it's Mueller time. And for most people, you know, that's the very definition of a perfect beach vacation. Which begs the question, when you're on vacation, especially when you're in a foreign country, what's your favorite beer? I bet you it's not the same favorite you have when you're up in the States. And I've noticed, you know, being in Latin America, Corona beer from Mexico is very famous, but not with the middle class and lower middle class crowds, unless, talking about Latinos now, they're on vacation. Or it's a special night out at a bar or a restaurant. What I mean is, Corona down here in Latin America is like Heineken up in the States. It's a premium import beer, which makes it more expensive. You know, from what I've noticed, there aren't too many middle and lower middle class people up in the States that drink Heineken regularly. You know, having a six-pack or two in the fridge at all times. They might have it around, but they'll save it for a special occasion. You know, parties, weekends with company over, vacations, special events. Why? Because it costs more than Mueller Lite. A lot more. Of course, if you're upper middle class or wealthy, you just drink what you want. And if it's Heineken, you drink that all the time or whenever you feel like having a beer. But it's different for people on a budget. You know what I mean. Now, down here in Latin America, of course, they have Heineken and Beck's and all the imports from Europe. But Corona seems to be the slightly upscale beer of choice for Latinos and Latinas that drink beer. And of course, you've got that little extra shove the lemon down the bottle top thing with Corona. Hey, what can I say? It's a materialistic society, and when you're drinking Corona, it gives the obvious impression that you're a person of means or of better means than the average guy. Now, I should qualify this by saying that I'm talking about places outside of Mexico, because when you're in the rest of Latin America, aside from Mexico, Corona is much more expensive because it's imported and gets nailed with something like a 30%+ import tax. However, in Mexico, things are quite different. Tecate, Dos Equis, and Corona are the three popular beers, and they all cost about the same, with Tecate usually being slightly less expensive. So in other words, if you're in Mexico drinking Corona, it's no status symbol at all. But in the rest of Latin America, sí, señor. And even up in the States, a bottle of Corona costs as much as a bottle of Beck's or Heineken, simply, again, because of the import taxes. But here's what you didn't know. Now, listen carefully. Corona beer is made with corn, and they buy all their corn from the U.S. It's all GMO corn, too. How do I know that? Because not so long ago, I was driving by a Corona bottling plant, and I noticed all the freight trucks with U.S. plates on them, loaded with corn, were coming from the States. And the lettering on the side of the trucks? Big U.S. factory farm corn producers. As you know, all the big corn producers in the States are using GMO. Think about that the next time you order up a Corona. Now, I gotta tell you, expat Eddie's always been a Corona guy, until he found out it was made with all GMO corn. So Eddie, being a health-conscious guy, except for the drinking and smoking and partying, he switched brands to, you guessed it, Heineken. Now, if that GMO thing piqued your interest, here's a short list of some other beers you really should think about before drinking. Budweiser contains GMO-modified rice. Then you've got Corona Extra, which not only has GMO corn syrup in it, it's got propylene glycol, which is the same main ingredient in that green goopy car antifreeze. Yummy. Go ahead, look it up. Then you've got Miller Lite, which has GMO corn and high fructose corn syrup. You've got Michelob, loaded with GMO sweeteners, and Coors, GMO corn syrup, and Pabst Blue Ribbon, high fructose corn syrup, and GMO corn. Now, to some, very bad news, right? And you gotta wonder why, of all the food and beverage products in the world, beer does not have one of those famously unread nutrition labels on it. How'd that happen? But back to the business of banks, phone numbers, and having a U.S. phone number, or faking a U.S. phone number while trying to remain as anonymous as you can here in Latin America. All right, here's an email from Dave. Man, there's a lot of Daves out there. He says, if Mr. B's got a Gmail address, he can sign up for Google Voice and get a U.S. number. Then he can install Google Voice on his Guatemalan or other Latin American cell phone to receive his calls from the States. If he wants to dial out, he can use Google Hangouts, the quote, dialer function, which is a different app than regular Google Hangouts. The only issue with this setup is that the number he dials has to have a U.S. country code, plus one, when he manually dials it, or it has to have the plus one in his contact list. I also believe that people calling him may have to have the plus one and the Google Voice number as well. However, that can be eliminated if you just use the voice.google.com website and plug in a headset. All right, then Dave says, 7 years ago, when I was waiting for my disability to be approved, I used the site to make all my calls as I was broke and my Obama phone was just a dumb phone. Then he says, finally, Johnny, if Mr. B wants to get fancy, he can always get a device called, quote, OBTalk, O-B-I-T-A-L-K, and plug in a plain old cordless phone, and he can make and receive calls like he was still in the States. Then Dave gives us the link here. It's www.obitalk.com/info/home. All right, Dave, thanks for that. The only thing is I hate f***ing Google. I can't stand anything about them. Sure, they've got this fantastic search engine, but it comes at a cost, a very heavy cost, a cost to your privacy and well-being. But I don't have to tell you guys about that. And really, the only reason why I'm stuck using Gmail is because 9 years ago when I started this podcast, the Google Big Brother connection was not under scrutiny. That was well before all the revelations came out about all the spying and data theft. Back then, nobody knew that Google was in bed with all the alphabet agencies, too. So then, after having Gmail for a couple of years, what do you do when you find out all that crap? Well, you just watch what you do and say on Google and switch to a paid, anonymous email service. You could use them both, but just know what you're getting into every time you get on Google. And if you still have your doubts as to how serious this Google problem is, test it for yourself. Try to send an encrypted message to another Gmail account. It'll get blocked. It won't go through. And then you'll get an error message that says they won't send or transmit suspicious mail. What they mean by suspicious is emails and messages they can't read, like encrypted emails and messages. That says it all. Just remember, if you're not paying for an email service, you are the product. They're milking you for data and selling it because nothing is for nothing. Unless, of course, you're a do-gooder. But even do-gooders have ulterior motives. You know, in the psychiatric literature, there's an actual psychologic term for it. It's called helper's high. Have you heard of that? Helper's high. And it means just what it says. As soon as you help somebody, the feel-good endorphins and neurotransmitters kick in and you feel good. And for some, there's even a delayed component to it. So once you've gone into a country like Haiti for 2 weeks and built solar outhouses for Jesus, of course, in the moment, you get that instant helper's high. But even weeks later, when you're sitting at a cocktail party in Cleveland, recounting all those good deeds to people who are bored stiff but are too polite to tell you about it, well, you can get off on it again with a rebound effect. The endorphins kick in again, and you get another little boost of that helper's high. And of course, everyone's different, and if you get a really big boost, then the do-gooder aspect of your personality is likely to come out in spades. Hey, nothing wrong with that, but it's nice to know there's actually a scientific basis to it, which is why some people, mostly sociopaths, never help anyone except themselves, because they don't get any of that feel-good rush, that helper's high. In fact, it's just the opposite. When they screw with people and get over on them, they get a kind of a helper's high in reverse. Oh, and just one last thing about living here in Latin America and having a U.S. phone number. Many expats I know just buy a Magic Jack. You know what those things are. Just look it up on the internet. I think you can still buy them at Radio Shack if Radio Shack hasn't gone out of business yet. I know they haven't down here in Latin America. I see them here and there. Anyway, it's something like 20 or 30 bucks for a year. You plug the thing into a USB port on your computer, and you've automatically got a US number. And from your computer, you can dial out to any US number for free, too. Now, to me, that turns out to be the simplest solution of all, except it costs you 20 or 30 bucks a year. And those other solutions we just heard about? They're free, but a little more complicated. And that Magic Jacket's plug and play. Enough said about that. Changing gears a bit, I'd like to make a few comments about Mexico. After all, Mexico's the country with the most gringo expats by far. Estimates now are around 2 million. And as you longtime listeners know, I get emails all the time from people living in Mexico telling me how bad things really are. These days, no one tells me things are getting better, only worse. Though before this year, 2019, I did get the occasional positive review, but that's just not happening anymore. And some gringos and expats who own land, apartments, businesses, etc., they've got their whole lives invested into making their plan B work in Mexico, and I'm sorry for you, but not sympathetic. Why? Well, even way back, 9 years ago, when I first started this podcast, I was warning expat gonna-bes and wannabes against two particular places in Latin America to stay away from. Besides the usual suspects, Cuba and Venezuela. So, from the very start, I was warning people against Mexico and Nicaragua. Oh, and two other countries I kind of warned people against. One being Brazil because of all the crime and the huge language barrier, Portuguese. And Belize for two reasons. Crimes against gringos and expats, and the fact that they've got a terrible medical system. And, of course, gringos and expats are always looking to have a hospital, clinic, and doctors that are first rate and nearby. And you're not going to find those in Belize. Why? Because they don't even have their own medical school, meaning every single doctor practicing in Belize has to be imported. Not to mention, at last count, I believe they only had 3 CAT scanners in the whole country. And 2 out of 3 are always in the shop. I know it's hard to believe. All right. Now, this might sound off topic, but occasionally people call me up, send me emails, etc., asking me to do an interview on their podcast or radio show. And once in a while, depending on who the host is, I do it. Now, a couple of years ago, I consented to an interview on a gringo expat show called Borderless out of San Miguel del Allende, Mexico. And during that interview, I think it was an hour long, we hit on the topic of real estate because that's what the guy's gig was all about, buying, selling, renting, and flipping real estate, specifically in San Miguel del Allende. Well, as usual, I told him exactly what I thought. I said it's a bad idea to invest in real estate. Unless you're dealing with a desperate seller. There's a huge real estate bubble throughout Latin America, and Mexico was, I felt, in the long run, a terrible investment, even more so than real estate in the rest of Latin America. Well, during that interview, I could sense this guy was getting pissed off at me. I was going completely against his spiel. Remember, all the while I've been telling people to stay away from Mexico. And here I was, doing an interview on this guy's turf. You know, I've always said that vacationing there is awful nice, but living, working, playing, and doing business there? Forget about it. Anyway, as you longtime listeners know, I used to get emails from people all the time defending Mexico. They'd always say something like, Johnny, 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 you're wrong. I live in a nice gringoized community. There's not much crime here at all. That's happening elsewhere in Mexico. The narcos, bad boys, and extortionists, they don't prey on gringos and expats. We live our little lives in our gated, protected communities, and they don't bother us. They say, Johnny, obviously you don't know about San Miguel del Allende. It's an expat's paradise. I admit, it is beautiful. To me, it's kind of a large-scale version of Antigua Guatemala, about 5 times bigger with 5 times the population. That said, let me tell you what's happening in that little gem of a town right now. Now remember, this is a place that so many thousands of gringos and expats claim is the best gringo expat retirement haven in all of Mexico. Now, there's one thing you have to remember. San Miguel del Allende is not near the U.S. border. In fact, it's in south-central Mexico, far, far away from the so-called narco corridors, where you're hearing all the bad news and homicides are coming from. In fact, if you're driving there from Laredo, Texas, it's about 600 miles and a 10-hour drive. Of course, that all depends on how many cops try to extort you along the way. Anyway, let me tell you what's happening to that nice, peaceful little town that used to be the number one calm, quiet, and beautiful expat retirement and travel destination, according to most every expat poll and questionnaire that's been done. So, right now, I'm excerpting from an article that came out just 2 days ago. It begins, San Miguel de Allende oozes old Mexican charm. There are cobblestone streets, colonial-era buildings, and wrought iron balconies everywhere. In fact, Travel and Leisure magazine has twice named the place the best city in the world for expats. It's been beloved by tourists and retirees from the U.S., Canada, and abroad. But lately, San Miguel has been attracting a very different sort of crowd, the drug cartels. And at the moment, they've arrived, and they're pushing cocaine and imposing their brutal brand of property tax. Yes, in San Miguel, the murders have begun. In fact, recently, a restaurateur died in a hail of gunfire in front of horrified customers after he refused to pay extortion demands to the cartels. Then, the son of the owner of a construction materials business was killed on his way to work. In another case, a tortilla shop owner in the nearby town of Calella was gunned down along with two of her employees. So lately, fruit vendors, convenience store operators, restaurateurs, cantina owners, etc. have closed their doors after shakedown visits from cartel members. Many businesses are lying low. All right, me, Johnny here. You've heard about this kind of stuff in various parts of Mexico all the time, but this is the part to pay attention to. It says these kinds of crimes were unthinkable here just a few months ago. It's still hard to believe, says one restaurant manager who, like many others, would give only his first name for fear of cartel reprisals. Then it says, San Miguel has now joined the chilling list of tourist and expat destinations like Cancun, Acapulco, Los Cabos, the Lake Chalapa region of Guadalajara, even Mexico City itself, now effectively losing their perceived immunity from the drug wars that have ravaged much of Mexico for years. The kind of news you've seen captured in headlines about beheadings, mass graves, and broad daylight shootouts are starting to arrive at tourist destinations. Meanwhile, it says President Andres Lopez Obrador has a markedly hands-off approach to crime. He's a leftist-slash-socialist who took office a year ago with his new strategy, abrazos, no balazos, or hugs, not shots, as he describes it. But whatever you want to call it, it doesn't seem to matter. Not only are there more Mexicans being killed than ever, 28,741 were killed so far this year up through October. Then it says, quote, security is a nationwide problem in Mexico now, and unfortunately, no one can escape it anymore, said head of the Bar, Hotel, and Cantina Association in the Mexican state where the city of San Miguel is located. He says, quote, it's getting harder and harder for people to go about their regular daily activities. Then it says, carved out of an arid plateau that runs through central Mexico, San Miguel Allende is a few hours' drive from Mexico City and a UNESCO World Heritage Site, making it an Instagrammer's dream and a gringo tourist favorite. The weather is near perfect all year round, and by some estimates, the population of 160,000 includes as many as 10,000 U.S. expats. Up to now, it says, the cartels have so far spared boutiques, cafes, and art galleries popular with tourists and expats. Also, the local automakers in the region, including Volkswagen and General Motors, have not yet been subjected to what small business owners have had to endure, because big manufacturing plants house their operations in well-defended, gated, guarded industrial parks. Though, as for the man or lady on the street, Carol Quinn, a Canadian who rents an apartment in San Miguel for extended periods of time, says she's not unconcerned by what she's hearing lately and reads about the lawlessness all the time. She said she's a little bit more nervous these days. Then another expat, Steve Foster, says he will probably return to his native Texas soon, since a gringo friend was kidnapped earlier this year. And though he was released after his wife paid the ransom, he worries that drug gangs will begin targeting more and more foreigners because they know we have more money than locals. Then it says talking to locals and people working at restaurants, for example, the conversation turns quickly grim. They will tell you about the increase in criminal activities, increase in drug use by locals, increase in the amount of payments to thugs who ask, not politely, for money or services in exchange for letting mom-and-pop stores continue to operate. Then it says the cartels have arrived, and they're very aggressive, forcing small businesses to employ their members or to become a de facto member of the gang themselves. Then it says, according to local shopkeepers and media reports, gangs will enter an establishment, drop off a bag of cocaine, telling the owner it's worth maybe 300,000 pesos, 15,000 bucks, and that they will come and collect the money in a couple of weeks, forcing some owners to shut their places and flee the city. Then it says, variations on this ploy are happening all the time. Reading on, it says, homicides in the state of Guanajuato, where San Miguel is, have gone up 260% since 2015, and 47 cops have been killed this year. So then what's the reason for the cartels moving in to previously quiet and seemingly immune tourist zones? Well, it says here, the government crackdown on fuel thefts in the region have spurred cartels to look for alternative income sources to finance their operations and turf wars. Beyond that, some of the big narco gangs in Mexico have splintered, and the competition for new territory has heated up, with newer drug lords looking to make a name for themselves and get some quick money, with extortion the easiest way to do that. All right, then finally the article says, drug violence has reached San Miguel de Allende. It's a dark cloud on the horizon because it heralds nowhere is safe anymore in Mexico. The fact is, there's such an international presence of gringos and expats in San Miguel de Allende, it'll guarantee that soon enough, this new fear felt inside the city will echo well beyond Mexico. The word will spread fast. Oh, and one final note about this Mexican thing. One frightened gringo writes, after living in Texas for the past 50 years, the last time we went to Mexico, the Border Patrol agent said upon our return, "Are you effing nuts? Just 2 days ago, there were beheaded bodies hanging from the international bridge." Then, he said, "You've got the Zetas sending hitmen to Dallas and Houston for coordinated hits on families there." Then he said, "Mexico, all of it, is a failed state. Visit at your peril." Yeah, he said, visit. Don't live, work, play, and or own property there. I'm sorry. Of course, if you're already heavily invested, you should think about getting the hell out. Like now. Before, as they say in Chicago, the shine wears off the turd. All right, we're almost at the end of the show now. Let me remind you, in about a month, my January 2020 Expat Insider Seminar kicks off in Guatemala, heading to El Salvador, then back again to Guatemala City and on to Antigua, Guatemala. So bottom line, if you want to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, you could do no better than to come down to my Expat Insider Seminar. For sign-up info and how to kill 2 birds with 1 stone, that is, apply for your Guatemalan residency while you're down for the seminar, which is optional, of course. Just go to www.theexpatfiles.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. And remember, if you're looking to save $750 off the single price, I can hook you up with a roommate that's double occupancy. Seems like every seminar we've been able to work that out. Any questions or comments, shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Yes. Gmail.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.